Hey there, everybody. It's September 8th, 2019, and this is episode 195 of At Percussion Podcast. And this is our first time trying a little something where we're going to have roundtable discussions with some of, maybe all, eventually, of the Percussive Arts Society committees. And I've got some members of the Health and Wellness Committee with me. So if y'all would just say hello, we've got Elizabeth De La Mater.
Hello.
And you're coming to us from Trinidad, is that right?
Yes, Trinidad and Tobago.
Is that where you're based?
Just this semester, I'm doing a sabbatical replacement for Dr. Janine Remy. So I'm at the University of West Indies.
Wow, very, very cool. And Nathaniel Gorick is here.
How's it going?
Good. How's it going, Nate?
Good, good.
Excellent. So Alyssa Castro is also here.
Hello.
Alyssa, where are you calling from?
Columbia, South Carolina.
Cool, cool. And Brad Meyer might come in a little late. He is, of course, the fearless chair of this committee, so he's late, right? or just absent entirely. But hopefully we're joined by Brad a little later. And, you know, I thought I would just maybe start with a question from one of my co-hosts, Ben Charles, who couldn't be here today, but he just says to y'all, hi, Wellness Committee. Thanks for all that you do to keep the percussion community healthy. It seems like there are so many different angles of wellness to be dealt with as percussionists. Occupational hazards like ear protection and carpal tunnel syndrome prevention, safe equipment, moving practices, mental health in a difficult career path, and general physical fitness. As a teacher, I find it difficult to adequately address all of these aspects. Some are easy to address, like requiring ear protection for drumline rehearsals. Others are much more difficult to bring up or address preventatively, like mental health. Do you have any advice for teachers and students alike in being proactive toward what you see as silent issues that can pop up? Are there any of these silent issues that you find to be more common than we might think? Does anyone want to start with any of that? I think Ben just literally asked probably everything that we will cover, which is perfect. So thanks, Ben. Does anyone want to start?
I can start if no one else wants to take it.
Please, Nate.
I know that the how many problems there are is about equal to, if not greater than, the amount of resources out there and the ways that you can tackle these sorts of problems. And so the real question is, what do you see as being something that you can fix right now, right? I don't think any of us are actual medical doctors here, physical therapists, anything like that. And so I know that my main issue, and Ben mentioned mental health, that is always something that I'm talking about with my students. But there is a point where our knowledge stops. And so the best thing that you can do is you can find someone who knows better. I have a lot of therapist friends. Anytime I go to a new school, I'm always in touch with their counseling services. Counseling services always has a great little packet that you can pick up, you can hand out to students. They're always happy to come and talk to your students. So whatever the problem is, the best thing I could suggest is look for help. Look for someone who knows and who can add a different experience than yours.
It's a big mystery when, and I think this is one of the questions, when to know this is like healthy stress and this is healthy anxiety, because anxiety is a natural reaction to, oh, I've got a performance coming up and I don't really have my crap together for it. Well, this is like your body and your whole system telling you like, hey, get your crap together, so you get some anxiety. It's so hard to know as a teacher when are my students experiencing some healthy anxiety versus not.
Well, if my friends don't mind, I have witnessed some younger students in the last few years having a difficult time themselves knowing the difference between just being stressed and simply when is it time to get more organized, or when is it time to just freak out and freeze. So I've kind of taken my cue from the syllabus approach. I think maybe all of us have experienced either giving or receiving a syllabus that seems like it's 20 pages long. It has a paragraph for everybody who's ever misbehaved in a class. But a syllabus that has a paragraph for a resource for this and a resource for that and a resource for this. And so I kind of do the same thing for my studios. So starting off in the beginning, like Ben said, with the resource packet, but instead doing that for everything. So dressing everything right away instead of waiting and saying, you're going to need to keep track of your nutrition. Here are some resources for that. Make sure that you're keeping track of your mental health. If you're experiencing these things, this is what resources we have on campus. And I try to put that together, and I tried then to keep talking about all of that. That seems to be working, or starting to work.
Yeah, so mental health, diet, and I assume the physicality of,
right.
of practicing wrists and elbows and shoulders and things like that. Are there anything else that you list on that syllabus? I think that's a wonderful idea, by the way.
Hearing protection. I taught at the University right. of Wisconsin-Oshkosh, and they decided that they were just going to require every syllabus to have a paragraph about that, that included links to, via their website, the university's website, links about hearing protection. And so I think that's marvelous. But yeah, I'll, you know, and then as we go, I'll keep adding things in. But I don't want to keep talking yet, but I think the main thing that helps all of these issues is to just keep talking about them. Like, they are important, and there's the way to eliminate stigma is to talk about them right away, and say it's important for you to stay healthy in all ways.
Yeah, of course. You know, and Ben mentioned that, you know, there's the obvious easy ones like hearing protection, but I actually find that one is kind of tough because you can hand out earplugs, but I mean, loud music sounds better than not. You just like that, you know, and when you're younger, I remember it just felt great to be on the drum line. It just, you enjoyed it more when it was like loud and awesome. And that's really cool. It's why rock concerts are loud, you know? And of course, when you're a little older, you start to feel it. It's like, no, I can feel it. I do not like this. I need earplugs, at least for myself. But yeah, even one that seems so simple, it can be surprisingly challenging to encourage. So I'm sure you're right. You got to keep talking about it. You got to keep putting it in their face, you know? Alyssa, I think you were going to say something.
Oh yeah. So for me, I teach a wide variety of ages. So I do work with some middle school, high school, and collegiate. So it is, certain situations are a little bit more difficult to address all of these things, for sure. But even for the older ones, I think the key for me to help, like, we can give them all these resources, but the key is making sure you model these things. So like I'm trying to, you know, not just talk about it, but I'm, you know, doing my workouts. I'm keeping track of my food, trying to eat well, trying to sleep, make sure I'm taking care of my mind, you know, and I talk about it, but I also ask really good questions. I try to, and try to keep tabs on them throughout, you know, each week. Some places I only see them maybe once a week. So I've got to ask questions and not just like, how's it going? Sort of questions. So for me, it's a lot about being that model and then asking a lot of questions with your students.
Yeah, that's great. I know, you know, speaking specifically of mental health radar and recommending students go to counseling center, et cetera, it was something that came up at PASIC. I know in health and wellness panel discussion, but it also came up in university panel discussion, which was the one I was on. And yeah, in both conversations kind of talked about the same way. And it sounds like universally throughout college campuses, the counseling centers are overwhelmed with students. They have so many students going to them, and they have so many students asking for help. And do you all have any thoughts on why that is today? And I just like, what's going on? What's happening to all of our students?
I think there are tons of things that are contributing to it. Just some ones that are on my mind recently is the sort of recodifying of the way that people feel, right? I know that channeling the spirit of Brad Meyer, right? He did a clinic and a lot of talks on burnout, right? The idea of burnout back when that was the hip new thing. Now what I'm hearing is this idea of derailment, right? Which I just heard of in the past month or two. And it's the idea that we have this path that we're on, and you feel like what you're doing is not contributing to this image of you in the future. And so it's like, well, we've all felt that, but now we have a word to sort of package that up. And so we have different ways to express how we're feeling mentally, which I think is part of it, right? We're coming from a society that didn't really talk about mental health, and now we're sort of getting into it, so it's becoming easier to identify these anomalies.
Tear me apart if this is right, but I sometimes worry, do we talk, this is going to contradict what we just said, but do we sometimes talk about it too much? Because I also worry, you know, if you see a student who say they can't get their stuff done week after week, and they wonder, oh, is there something I need to address, like health-wise, because this is really giving me a lot of anxiety, and it's making me depressed. But sometimes I wonder, like, wait, but have you had a week yet where you got everything done? Like, do you know what that feels like yet? Because again, that might be a perfectly healthy response to just not getting your stuff done. So there's nothing wrong with you. There's something wrong with the amount of work you're taking on, or the amount of challenges you're putting on yourself, et cetera. And it's maybe more related to burnout than to, oh, I have an anxiety problem or something like that, you know, or I'm experiencing mania and I need to address the mania. It's like, well, you need to, you know, have you had a week that felt like, oh yeah, come Friday, I nailed everything and I was ready. I was prepared for my lesson. I did all my homework. Like, have you had one of those weeks yet? Because you all know when you're a student, once you get a little behind, it's so hard to not get further behind, and it's so hard to just like finally be caught up. I remember being a student and I felt like there were so few weeks where I got everything done, you know?
I think that this there is also part of the learning process of being an adult is scheduling and keeping track of your calendar, and then learning to be an artist, there's an extra piece to that. So as our students are learning that, they also are often dealing with their emotions. And we can see it. Sometimes it takes a while to get to know the student, but you can see a difference between somebody who is just not organized and somebody who maybe wasn't organized and then now is frozen. So I think there are words to use with students that aren't saying, as Ben said, we're not experts, but you can also ask your students questions. And some people I know who don't like to use feeling words and don't like to get mushy, just stick to things like, are you taking care of business? Did you take care of business this week? And if you aren't, or if you didn't this week, why not? Do you need to get outside help to achieve that? And I think that for some people, it's just learning how, and some people do need to get that extra help.
I think one of the things that this is kind of a recent interest of mine, so I haven't really gotten to try it much with my students, but is just kind of getting into the idea of like, what are your thoughts about things? Because your thoughts are really what's creating the feelings, and that is creating your results. So if you're constantly, like, for example, like a student that's always beating themselves up, like really, really negative, they're repeating these like basically habit, like loops of negative self-talk that is basically crippling. And this is just one sort of angle, but and they don't even realize that it's that same repetitive thought or thoughts that are really getting in their way. So that's just something new that I've kind of been getting into and thinking about. And I've noticed it even before I started getting into this idea of like thought work, but I've noticed it with students that, you know, always are beating themselves up when you're working with them. And you're like, okay, well, if that's what you're, if that's what's going through your head when it comes time for performance, you know, these are the same things that are going to continue happening and really just block you. So,
yeah, I think with the my younger students, when I taught younger kids, that was especially difficult because, of course, we're all working on negotiating that self one and self two, so to speak, the, you know, the ability to be critical without criticizing yourself and your value. And so all of those artist emotions for younger kids especially can be difficult. And if we're talking about college kids, people who are 18 and 19 are still quite young. And, you know, their brains aren't developed yet. So I think that feeling talk is, that's really good. That's a journey for everybody, right?
And there's that TED Talk, I'm not going to be able to recall it right now, but about that, like, second or third growth spurt that occurs when you are anywhere from 20 to 26 or something. It's like this wide adult range, but it is this personality growth spurt. I was going to just add one thing. I've been just poking around for this, and two doctors of psychology I bumped into, Karen Schwartz. There's a great little panel discussion that Peabody John Hopkins Institute's posted online with these two doctors and Midori, the very famous violinist. Maybe you guys have seen this. But she says, Dr. Karen Schwartz says, she's often asked, why is it when people go off to college that they have their first mood episode? She answers, partly because that's the age when this happens, mood episodes meaning. So you take some biological vulnerability, mix it with some stress, maybe a little sleep deprivation, and maybe a little more exposure to alcohol and drugs. All this mixes together and it creates this time of real vulnerability. And then Dr. K. Jameson says, regarding moods and how creativity are linked, she says, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing here, but she says, it has been observed for thousands of years, a kind of observation that people who are creative in the arts tend to be more vulnerable to intense moods and periods of occasional psychosis. And that was just observed for a couple thousand years. And then in the late 1800s, people began to do biographical studies looking at the rates of mood disorders, et cetera. And today we're looking at living artists, and all these findings have been quite consistent to show an elevated rate of particularly bipolar illness, of depression, and a bit of mania or even severe mania. And in the past 10 years, there have been 7 or 8 very large scale studies. And by large, she's saying 50,000 to 1.4 million people in the sample size. And these are looking at the rates at which people who have been hospitalized by bipolar illness or schizophrenia or depression, are they more likely to be in creative fields? And the answer is yes. However, she makes an important point. It's important to note that most people who are creative do not have mood disorders and vice versa.
Yeah, I've actually learned a bit about this, and I've read that article. I've read quite a bit from Dr. Jameson, and
she's amazing. I've been so
she's
impressed.
Incredible.
She's so cool.
I think that one thing that's perhaps unfortunate is that I think the arts allow some people to go untreated for a while because of the arts' unusual schedule, the lifestyle. So if you are somebody who can't sleep, maybe has some other habits that aren't very healthy, you can get away with it. If you are somebody who has a 9-to-5 job and you're having other health problems, you have to deal with them sooner. But you also can be, your habits your moods even can be written off as, oh, he's so artistic. Where actually it's, maybe somebody could have gotten help a lot earlier.
Right.
So
right.
People talk about having to break down Beethoven's door to go get his laundry because he couldn't take care of it. And it's like, that man was very depressed.
Right. He's not well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it, in some ways it's great because people who are ill can still have an outlet. And yeah, if I can't sleep, I still can work. But at the same time, I think that some of us perhaps were able to, maybe not able is not the right word, but sometimes the treatment isn't, or the mood isn't caught as early as it could be.
I think that sort of ties into something I've been thinking about lately, is this idea of normalization and sometimes even glorification of being overworked or stressed or depressed.
Yes.
Like the idea of the tortured artist. It's like, well, you can't be great unless there's something wrong upstairs, which is, you know, and yep. That's, you know, sort of a historical look. And being in a college setting, you have these students who seem to be competing for who can have the most homework or who can get the least amount of sleep. Yeah, I got 4 hours yesterday. That's nothing, bro. I got two. It's like, that's not a good thing.
Right.
You know, and it just goes and it's accepted as being how it's supposed to be. And so sometimes these problems aren't caught because they don't know their problems.
A few weeks ago, I got to talk about Bruckner and how just what was going on there.
but a quick
Google search told me, according to allmusic.com and a lot of these we already know, but some of them I did not, but Beethoven, Robert Schumann, Tchaikovsky, and Rachmaninoff are perhaps the most famous composers who suffered severe bouts of depression, but also included in that gloomy company were Orlando Lassus, Gesualdo, who's probably the most famous murderer, crazy, threw his wife out the window, craziness, John Dowland, Hector Berlioz, Anton Bruckner, etc. There's just so many. It's no wonder why we have that romanticized view of, yeah, like you said, Nate, the tortured artist.
Well, and if you look at contemporary society, how many great artists have we lost to suicide recently? You know, you look at way in the past, you know, Kurt Cobain, more recently Robin Williams, and we just have this idea that depression is tied to genius, and that's not.
I feel like now is a great time to say this quote from mathematician and philosopher Bertrand Russell, who says, I'm going to paraphrase, there was a hill I would go walk to in my free time and watch the sunset and contemplate suicide, but I did not because I wanted to learn more about mathematics. And it's that simple. That's the quote. It's like, oh, I guess he felt an urge for suicide, but did not because he had this curiosity, aching curiosity, driving him to continue his life in mathematics. And I have to say, yeah, I mean, even though like sometimes you do feel the mania of the busyness, and certainly when you're a student and you're in your master's degree and you're practicing 6 hours a day or whatever, it can be okay for a short period. But yeah, you have to stay healthy, because if you care about the art more than yourself, well, you're not doing the art any favor by being sick yourself. You can't do your art if you're sick, you know, or gone.
No,
that's it. That's it. Please.
It used to be acceptable for us to for leave people by the roadside and for people to drop out. And you made it more prestigious, right? If we succeeded through. And so that's kind of the old conservatory model. And, you know, the whole idea of the language now being burnout. And well, when I went through school in the 80s and the 90s, people just dropped out because they couldn't handle it. They weren't tough enough. And actually, maybe those people were more healthy. But yeah, this the tortured artist idea, all of that, maybe that's also why we're seeing more kids in counseling, because maybe they're actually more healthy and they are getting that they do have the language. They do have the resources. It's still not great, but have a big change, especially in the States, I think that would be a wonderful thing.
So I just want to mention that I was that student. I was that student that didn't really sleep and didn't take care of any of that stuff, especially through my undergraduate, and to my detriment. And so that is one of, I mean, that's really what I spend my time day in and day out, is just sharing my whole entire journey, in the sense that I was always overworked, always just like frazzled and crazy, never sleeping enough, using really bad self-talk and negative stuff. And, you know, thankfully I did have professors that I went and asked them questions, like, can you help me with this? And they said, hey, you know, have you tried meditating, and tried to direct me in the right direction. And so then when I graduated, it was like, I shouldn't have waited until I graduated. But for me, it was like, well, when I graduate, I'll make sure I take care of these things. And so now I try to get people to understand, my students and friends to understand, that it's not like when you get to some sort of level, then you can take care of it, because I kind of had that common misconception. And then when I did my master's degree, I had a very different approach, and a much more balanced, if you can call balance real, approach to my degree. And it was a completely different experience for me. And so that's why I ask questions, because I was that person. And so if I can kind of spot it earlier, I can try to help them, point them in the right direction at least.
Yeah, that's great. I always try to tell the freshman class, you know, you've got your schedule, you're moved in, you're ready to go. There are going to be a lot of extra things coming at you, like people approaching you about chamber groups or ensembles, fraternities, sororities, you know, join this club. There's so many things. And it seems like they often come out of high school with the notion of like, go get it and face the world, get all this stuff done. And that's kind of what you need to do. And I always tell them, hey, just like try a semester with the bare minimum, because the statistics, the metrics of people who don't make it through college, is very high across the nation. Yeah. You know, and of course it varies at schools. You know, a lot of schools are really like high profile schools. They say they're harder to get into than get out of. If you get in, you're definitely going to get out. But the majority of colleges and universities aren't like that. And the dropout rate's very, very, very high. So that goes to show, hey, the bare minimum is hard, you know, because most people aren't getting through it. So you're going to see all these opportunities. And I'm not saying they're bad for you. They're good things to do. But just like scope it out for a semester and see what that feels like.
I have a question for Alyssa. Right. You said that you did your master's, approached it differently. Did you have pushback from professors?
I think my professor was really understanding, main professor, like, but then as far as my other professors, not really. I don't really feel like I got a lot of pushback. But I don't know. I just made it really important. It made it like non-negotiable for myself. Yeah. And I spent a lot of the time at my house doing my work. That also helps too. I mean, you know, when you can just kind of shut yourself in, do the stuff you need to do, take care of yourself, kind of put those blinders on and, you know, put your priorities in place, which was not easy at all, for sure. But for me, by myself. But no, I don't really think like that I got that much pushback, as long as I was doing my work and showing up. And for me, I actually felt like I made a lot of improvements. My practicing was better. Everything was better. And you kind of build that momentum. And then, I mean, people could probably say something. I'm sure people did, but I kind of just don't care or didn't care.
Right.
Just did my own thing.
Yeah. It's really incredible how bogged down by school drama you can get in. I just remember that being a big thing in my undergrad. It seemed every time I went into the computer lab, someone was talking about something. Best thing I ever did, just remove yourself from that social situation, you know, eats away at your time, eats away at your mental health. So I think that sequestering yourself was one of the best things you could have done.
Yeah. Alyssa, did you find that in your undergrad you took on a lot of extra things, or do you think it was just a healthy amount of practicing? And where do you fit into that part of the discussion, do you think?
Well, I for sure took on too much. But the expectations kind of were a lot at the time at that university as well. But that is kind of one of my tendencies, is to do too much or to take on too much. So I just kind of know that about myself now, and I have a better self-awareness, which is kind of something that goes with all of the stuff, health and wellness, is whether it's physical or mental, it's just like kind of gaining that self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And so I tried not to take on as much, for sure. I didn't work as much during my master's on purpose, versus when I was an undergrad. But I tried to like overcompensate by practicing too much, and sacrificing sleep, not realizing like how much of an impact that had on me, you know?
Yeah.
I recall myself practicing a whole lot and playing in a lot of ensembles because the percussion studio was fairly small, which was great because we got a lot of experience.
Yes.
And just letting other stuff slide. You know, I just knew, okay, there's going to be enough. I'm going to relax a certain amount. I just have to. And I don't know. I guess I never felt that pressure of you got to get all the A's you can, and you got to have a killer report card. And if you don't impress everyone, you're not going to get into the next place or whatever. I think I just had a real down-to-earth perspective, probably because my parents both worked at the university. So it was very easy to see that from within, and just thinking, okay, like there's so many grad schools and there's so many grad schools I would be thrilled to go to. Yeah, I'll get into one of these. Like they can't all care that I got a D in, you know, this in sociology or something. And I'm by no means recommending that to any listeners. I'm just saying, you know, something would have to give, you know, like your grades are going to have to give to be happy. Or if that's not acceptable to you, you got to do all these great, great, great grades. Well, great. Then don't play in six ensembles like I did, you know, just do the bare minimum, you know. Or yeah, don't hang with your friends that often, you know, hang with them, but don't hang with them that much. Mm. Yeah.
Sounds pretty reasonable.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the thing. Like, it's so hard to, I don't know, like teach this, you know, it's so hard to teach this attitude or teach this approach because it's so ingrained in everyone's personalities. And it's certainly not a flip that anyone can switch, you know. I mean, I think we've all been there. You're making recommendations to students and they hear you, they know you're right, but it's not built into their personality yet. It's not built into their mindset yet. So it takes some trials and tribulations to figure that out. And that leads me to a question from co-host Carly Vigna. And I guess just to kind of get specific on what we're talking about here, she says, how can we as teachers help our students learn to take care of their mental and physical health as musicians? We've definitely talked a lot about mental, but any thoughts on physical? We kind of move into that.
Yeah, I've been talking to drummers about, you know, the reality that if they are 20 or 24, then when they're in their 40s, that's 20 years of drumming, right? And so I'll approach it like a football career, or a baseball or whatever they're into. And so I've started talking about being an athlete. And now I'm down in Trinidad where people carry their instruments and carry their pans everywhere. It's the same thing. It's like, we're talking about you lasting, hopefully you're going to play as long as you live, or you want to be drumming when you're in your 60s, that's two football careers or three football careers. And so if you think your body's going to last for another 40 years, then you have to be careful now and you have to prepare it. So using the healthy athlete analogy, I think gets through to some students. So that's where I'm personally starting to research more and talk to people more, because I instead became injured and had a couple of car accidents, and I've learned, you know, after the fact. And so now I'm learning about preventative care.
Yeah. Anybody else with that?
Yeah. For me, it's about taking the time of course, to make it a priority to yourself, but to do little things every single day, because that consistency over time is going to do you way better than spending 1 year focusing on maybe just running some or maybe just eating a little bit better. Those things, they are things that you have to really take care of day in and day out to see long-term benefits. You know, a lot of people try to lose weight and they lose weight and then they gain it right back because they didn't realize that it was going to be something that they had to commit to for a longer period of time than just a quick fix or something like that. So for me, I approach it consistency every single day. A little bit is better than nothing. Yeah. Because I think most people, they tend to get overwhelmed with how much they have to do. I mean, because taking the time to exercise every day, taking the time to, you know, eat well and cook maybe your own food, that kind of stuff, like it takes a lot of time and can get old for sure. But making that just like a part of your routine every single day. And then if you don't do your routine, then you have to take a look and say, hey, what did I do? Were my priorities in line? If they weren't, then you just get right back on track the next day and don't quit forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think following along with that a little bit, the idea of how do we broadcast this sort of idea to our students? I know that I am brutally honest about a lot of things with my students, right? I can tell you right now, all of my students know that every Sunday morning, I play tennis with the orchestra director. Granted, every Sunday morning, I get my butt kicked by the orchestra director.
Great.
But every one of my students, I can talk to them about, yeah, you know, and I do this exercise sort of thing. They'll walk in and they'll see me stretching when I'm between lessons, the practice room, you know. They look up to us as role models. And so I try and be as human as possible in those interactions, you know. I talk a lot about my physical health. I talk a lot about my mental health. You know, there are times when they'll just see me eating leftovers and, you know, I will tell them, yeah, it's just, you know, cooked up chicken with broccoli, you know, a little bit of hot sauce to give it some flavor, nice and healthy. And you try and model these and I try and demonstrate it a little more than I think what I was used to seeing when I was learning. So I, you know, it's not just about taking care of yourself, it is, but it's also about showing them how they might be able to take small steps to take care of themselves too.
The food thing is interesting because you're usually maybe there during lunch and or dinner, both. I think you have a lot more opportunities to like for them to actually see, because that was where I would get like the most questions. You know, if I bring my own lunch and they're like, what are you eating? And I'll tell them mm-hmm. why I am eating what I'm eating. And that's a good time to kind of open up those conversations too in breaks when you're eating lunch together or maybe eating dinner together in those like little cracks of the day that aren't necessarily in the lesson or in a rehearsal where you're trying to be focused on, you know, what you're trying to get done. I'm with you. You have to model it for sure. And if you're sore because of the really hard weightlifting workout that you did, you tell them you're sore. They mm-hmm. should know, like, hey, it's okay that you're sore. That's part of, like, exercising.
Yep.
Yeah, let's talk about exercise then. I actually, this summer, trying to get reacquainted with the old friend called the gym. Do you all have any specific exercise tips that are good specifically for musicians and percussionists, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it always has to be something that you're suited for, that you are going to enjoy. And so that, of course, can vary. But then there are a lot of people who have found that, for example, getting doing weight training specifically for the instruments that they have to carry or play is great. And then absolutely, as our fearless leader has shown, yoga and all of those holistic exercises are absolutely wonderful. And the nice thing is that there are a lot of trainers who are used to now working with musicians. So mm-hmm. if it's not tennis on Sundays, then you could still find something, hopefully, that you'll enjoy.
I personally know myself, and I work out mostly at home. I like to do a variety of things because I tend to get bored really easily, and I hate cardio. So I have to do it, though. So I make myself kind of do some cardio in there. But okay. I do like to work on a good bit of weight training. I feel like it definitely helps me, especially with moving gear, a lot of that. I tend to do a lot, even though I am mostly the teacher now. But, you know, especially with my younger students, like, they don't really have a lot of physicality. And so they don't even really know, like, they're not working with weights. So I try to, in those cases, try to recommend them doing like body weight types of exercises, squats, like we're lifting things frequently, pushing heavy things. So for me as a musician, I like doing a good bit of weightlifting. I find that it really helps protect my back. And yoga is great, especially for the mind, and kind of, that was kind of my introduction to meditation, even just the idea of awareness. And that really did help me because I didn't really exercise until I was doing my master's degree. So that was kind of something I noticed while I was doing that. Like, I felt like I got better at certain things in music just because I had a better overall strength. It's like, you know, functional fitness, I guess, is a thing where you're just really working on just making sure that you can do all the normal things with your body without getting injured, and to hopefully prevent future injuries.
Well, for sure. I feel like I know, like, after I've been lifting weights for some time, I feel like holding mallets too feels, cause I mean, I know, you know, there's no muscle in your wrists, like there's no muscle there, but having support around it, it just seems to make things a little easier. And that also might be part of, like, while you're exercising, you also tend to be sleeping better, and it just does so much for your overall, just how well you feel in general. I was going to get just give my specific recommendations for weightlifting, and feel free to shoot any of this down or tell me that there's better things to do, because I certainly don't know. But I've always thought, okay, more reps, less weight is probably more valuable. And also, all those machines are different. And if you don't know one of them, sit down at it, lie back on it, whatever, put the weight at zero and just do the motion a few times, and then maybe add a little more weight, see what that feels like, and then you kind of figure out where you want to be. I was always told when you are doing the positive actions, so like, say, pushing a bell bar up, when you're doing a positive action, you want to breathe out. When you're doing a negative action, like bringing it back, you want to breathe in. And that has to do with your blood oxygen and how all that works. And also, don't take for granted the negative side, because I've heard you actually get more out of the negative than you do the positive.
Yeah.
So again, what that means is, say you're lifting something and you push it out, that would be the positive. When you slowly bring it back down and you're fighting gravity, that's the negative. And I might also say there's a one little trick I learned is take a very light dumbbell and just like hold your arms down flat and rotate it up like this. And you really you feel it here in your forearms, both above and beyond. And I mean, you want to do it with 10 pounds or something. I mean, something really, really, really light. And it really does feel like it works the whatever those are. Fingers. Fingers. I couldn't think of the word. Fingers. Yeah, really, that's about it, you know.
Yeah,
because I see these dudes, they put on tons of weight and they just go like bam and do these big explosive lifts, and of course I wonder, I'm sure that makes you look great at the beach, but probably not what we need. Like, I don't think we need like large muscle mass to play. I think, Alyssa, you made a really good point that made me think. Think about that statement, because you mentioned moving gear, and we had Jonathan Haas on the last episode, and he opened the episode with his back injury. He just had a pretty severe back injury that he was recovering from moving gear.
Yeah.
I and think he's recovering well, but yeah.
Rich Holly did a article in PAS a long time ago, and I meant to look it up for this podcast, but I couldn't find it. So Rich, maybe you can tell us, but it was an article of where he weighed all of his gear on his drum set, and then he wrote out the number of times he moved it for one gig. And I think he counted his steps, but by the end of the night, he had all of the times he had moved that much weight. And so then he added it up at the end of the night. So he said, so by the end of the night, I have moved this much weight, but it was spread out and it was very interesting. And so then again, that goes with how you work out and what everybody's been saying about reps and endurance.
Brad, we're talking, we've all given our bench press max numbers. What's your max? What's your max, buddy?
I know I can do at least 10.
You can certainly do pounds. 10. Everyone, Brad Myers here, and I'm so embarrassed because I just looked back through the email invitation and like the whole committee is on there except Brad. So it's my bad.
It's all good. I was
no, it's terrible. It's no good. I'm fired.
Fixing sprinkler valves, so it was a fun time.
You played which Revell?
Do what?
Oh, did you say you played Revell? Sorry.
No, I'm sprinkler valves. Like
sprinkler valves.
Yeah.
Revell sprinkler valves.
I'm playing. Yeah. I'm playing Bolero, so I am playing Revell this coming weekend.
Hey.
So. There you go. There you go.
Anyway, sorry if I jumping in late. I'll try to contribute without like saying everything that's already been said, I'm sure.
Yeah, sure. We were just hitting physical things and specific gym tips. And yeah, I thought you'd tell us how much you can lift and stuff, because I know. Yeah, any other physical, I don't know, any other things for exercise specifically?
Just going along with what the other two said, it's about finding what works for you. You know, Alyssa hates running and loves weightlifting. I'm exactly the opposite. You know?
I hate running.
And so we each find our own way. But the only way that you can figure out what works for you is to go and do it.
Yes.
You know, go to the gym, try all the machines, see what feels good. And
maybe not all the machines in one day, though.
not all of them.
Good
you
point.
Have to go to the gym at least twice.
That's why Brad's the chair. He keeps you guys.
Oh.
Yeah, that's why he's the boss of this thing. So speaking of running, what is up with the health and wellness fun run at 4 a.m. in the freezing cold every PASIC?
That well, is not healthy.
this last PASIC, I think we only did one day of fun running because Nathan Daughtry stepped down from that, and he'd been kind of leading that for the past millennium or something. And so we decided to just kind of focus on a session each day. And so we haven't been doing the fun run. We're still kind of talking about if we want to do that for this year or not. But I think we're probably going to move more towards just regular sessions, because while the fun run was absolutely fun, being at, you know, 4 or 5 a.m., especially the second and third morning of PASIC when people are the most willing to get up early.
When they're the most hungover.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that. I'm with the health and wellness committee. So, it kept kind of declining in attendance throughout the days of the weekend. So we figured we'd try to do some sessions that were a little more, different and indoorsy, so that people can feel a little bit more like comfortable to attend them.
It has been very impressive. I mean, the days I've seen you all gathering in the lobby, and you, Nathan Daughtry, Pete Zambito, John Beck Jr., I'm just impressed. Like, wow, you guys are all up and you're all doing it. And I mean, I'm up, but I'm in in my pajamas and going to get coffee.
Come on, man, get in there.
I know I should. Well, like Nate said, I'm the opposite. I'm like Alyssa. I can handle weightlifting, but I just hate running. I just hate it. I'll play racquetball. That's aerobic. That's great.
I'll do it if we do it again.
Okay.
All right. Well, maybe we can get an underground fun run going, you know, something that's off the books and all secretive and, you know.
We could have a password.
Make it exclusive.
That's right. I like that.
Yeah, have a secret code, secret handshake.
If you make it exclusive, people will want to be there. That's what I've heard.
Well, that's fine. Then nobody's invited to run ever at all. That's what I'll do.
Maybe you have to pay to be in it.
Yes. Oh. Payable to me. I'll give that to PA. Yes, surely.
I think so. So we haven't actually talked about this yet, Brad. And now that you're here, and sorry to spring it on you, but just like, what is the Health and Wellness Committee? I mean, I know it's pretty self-explanatory, and a lot of the people listening are probably in the know, but I think plenty of listeners might not be.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I joined the Health and Wellness Committee, I think, 6 years ago. And you know, I think I was late 20s, something like that. And I had really not heard much about it before that. And generally, people find out about the Health and Wellness Committee once they hurt something, like whether it's a wrist or legs or something going on with them. And then they go, oh, there is a Health and Wellness Committee. And so I've found that throughout the years, it's been, you know, not under the radar, but it's definitely been, you know, something that's just kind of been going along and had some great things that were contributing to PAS. And so what I thought I'd do is I'd try to really showcase it by showing people and getting the word out that, you know, the Health and Wellness Committee is not just about stretching out before you play marimba or playing eight on a hand before you play snare drum. It's much more about, you know, preventative maintenance being one of the concerns. Whereas the big thing right now that I find that people are really enjoying talking about is mental health and wellness, which is the idea of, you know, basically how do we, you know, get through a semester of school or get through that high school marching band season? How do we help students that are struggling with various kinds of anxiety or, you know, depression or things that can be really challenging for especially young students to deal with that have never dealt with that before or have very little experience with it? And then the same thing for teachers. You know, none of us, for the most part, are trained psychiatrists or therapists or counselors. So how do we deal with student anxiety and mental health and wellness issues when we're not technically, you know, trained to do that as well? So trying to find ways to inform people without them feeling like they should take on the role of a trained psychiatrist or health and wellness person, while still being able to have some help to students, especially those in need, because I know we've all had students with various problems and they can get as bad as, you know, suicidal thoughts and tendencies. And that's always a scary thing. And if you at least know a little bit of what to do, you can at least get that person pointed in the right direction and can really help, you know, save a life or, you know, prevent someone from harming themselves. And obviously that being the most extreme version of that. But then there are other things, you know, I think people like Andy Harnsperger and Bill Bachman are fantastic when it comes to the physical health and wellness aspects of it. Those are two people that I see constantly that keep promoting the idea of health and wellness. And especially, you know, we kind of saw Bill, he's struggling through his wrist injury right now. Yeah. And just showing that, you know, you can get hurt at any level of playing, him being just an amazing player, and how he's dealing with coming back through that with his drum set playing and tenor playing. So, you know, the health and wellness is it's a very wide reaching group. And that's why I think so many people enjoy it when they find out about it, because they find that there's something that, first of all, they can contribute and get out there. But secondly, there's something that they can learn, if not a lot of things they can learn.
I think Elizabeth made the comparison a few minutes ago of athletes to musicians. And I literally watched something a few days ago, I think it was football and also boxing, but they talked about injuries are expected and this is a game where you do hurt yourself. Is there, and I know that's like, well, football and boxing obviously is way different than what we're doing, but do you think there is an acceptable amount of strain and injury that we can expect, or like certain thresholds that you kind of have to get over? I mean, a very simple one might be like callus development. Yeah. Or something. Do you think there's anything like not non-topical that is acceptable?
I think that we're finding there are boundaries like calluses and sore muscles that we do have to get through, but I think we're finding better ways of dealing with or helping people find where the difference between being uncomfortable versus actually hurting yourself is. Because, you know, just like with weightlifting or running, you can't expect to get better if you don't get uncomfortable. And sometimes there is slight pain, or there's some soreness. But I think, and I was a part of a type of person or a group that would just push ourselves to the max, and you just have blister under blister under blister in your hand, and you know, just things cracking open through like the lifeline of your palm, and all this sorts of stuff. And I think that I don't think any detriment or ill will towards my prior instructors. I think that it was just, you just keep pushing on through, and that's how you get better. And I think that we're finding that that's not always 100% true, but we definitely have to get uncomfortable while realizing some kind of limits and set some, you know, boundaries for how far we push ourselves, and so that we don't fully injure ourselves.
That was pretty anti-drum corps, what you just said.
Was it? Because I've been practicing concert marimba, and I got one of these the other day.
Oh, okay. I know. I get those all the time. I get those. I know those are the worst. I get those. Yeah, I get those all the time. Anybody else?
I think it goes along with what Nate said with the tortured artist. I think that it doesn't need to happen. I think that's, yeah, the discomfort that, or topical, as you said, Casey, sure. But injuries, they don't need to be necessary.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the major injuries can be stopped if you realize it at the minor injury, and rather than trying to push through it and muscle it out.
Right.
You know, 10 more reps, doesn't matter. And that's not going to hurt more. Well, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my favorite and I think most useful athletic comparison is to say, you know, you would never see an athlete cramming before the game. You know, oh, I missed all of the practices all month, and so, okay, I'm just going to, like, work out a lot the night before. It's like our bodies don't work that way. A, you'll hurt yourself, but it also just won't work. Like, even if your body could endure that, you wouldn't. That wouldn't work, you know. So anyway, I mean, like, all of our techniques and things are very physical, and it'd be much, much better to do a small amount of practice every day than do a larger amount one day. Not only will it be more productive, but it'll you won't get hurt, you know, you're less likely to get hurt.
Well, and also I remember hearing stories of, you know, pit instructors having their kids do tens of hundreds of push-ups, you know, throughout the day, and in really bad wrist position with their hands. It's like you're hurting the thing that you're trying to develop. And I think that there's been a lot of great movement forward versus getting rid of more of that kind of militaristic, you know, punishment for missing a note and not making people run 80 laps or do 100 push-ups.
Right.
Yeah, it seems so positive now. I mean, the culture in every way seems just, yeah, to have gone in a much, much better direction.
I think that if a student is having like any sort of inclination that they might be hurt, they need to go get checked out, and not just let it be like, oh, well, I'm hurt, like, or anything like that. No, you need to actually take the steps and go see a doctor about it, and have an examination and see if there really is something going on instead of postponing it. Because I think a lot of people just try to take things into their own hands and postpone it. But for me, where I started to develop tendonitis, I went straight to our physical people. I can't remember what they're called at the university. And I was actually able to get an exam with one of them, and they helped me. And then I got into physical therapy, minimized the amount of time that I was out. And so you have to be curious. And the awareness of like, this is, you know, more than a few days. Okay. My inclination is go see a doctor, do it now. Yeah. Don't wait. Get taken care of.
And Alyssa, you said more than a few days. And I was just going to ask, how do you know when you're hurt? You know, because I feel like I'm practicing every day. I'm like sore all the time. Am I hurt though? Like, it's a very simple but hard thing to figure out, I think.
It's really hard to know. But I think with our hands, one hand might not be doing the same thing as the other. And if you know that you're doing a lot of the same, you're doing probably an equal amount with both hands, then that's kind of that was my first indicator, was like, well, my left hand's not having any problems. But my right hand continuously is having problems. So there must be something to it. And of course I gave it time, to know whether or not, cause I mean, it's hard to know, am I sore? Am I hurt? But generally, if something's like stinging, or like you might have pain down your neck, if there's multiple things involved, then I think, you know, that's a good indicator that you might need to go get something checked out.
Oh, and that reminded me back to the gym ideas. I was going to say, if I do bicep curls. Machine curls. Yeah. Thanks, Brad. If I do curls. Yeah, I get this weird, after so many, I get this weird feeling like in my lower back. And yeah, if you ever have like connected strange little buzzings or funny aches, there's other ways to exercise that muscle.
Probably not good.
I will, I will do it. I'll do curls on the machine until I just barely feel that. And it's very faint when it starts. And then I'll stop and I'll go to free weights. You know, something my father taught me when I was a kid is, you know, every exercise you need to do, shoulders, back, arms, you can do with free weights. There's some way to do it with free weights and a bench.
That any acute pain is not good. So if something is acute, then that's a problem. And swelling is a problem.
And one of the things I just like to add to that is I feel like a lot of us as teachers get a student that will walk in and they'll say, hey, I've got this problem. It hurts here, or it hurts, you know, somewhere in our wherever. And we'll go, oh, I think I know what that is. And we'll give them like solutions for whatever that is. But really, anytime I have a student walk in, I really say, you know, that might be this, it might be that. Really go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And get it checked out, because we all try to use these very personalized experiences of what worked for our specific situation, but we definitely don't know what's going on in their wrist most of the time, and arms and body. So it's important that we don't try to be with the mental stuff, try not to be a therapist, or try not to be a medical doctor either, and make sure that they go to actual people that can really diagnose what's going on in there.
Right.
Yeah. And talking about personal experiences in teaching, it's important as instructors that were aware of these things in our students. I just remember being a master's student having an issue with my left hand. And so one of my teachers just said, well, for the next 2 weeks, we're going to do all exercises that don't use your left hand. Go get it checked out. Go get some exercises from a physical therapist. We'll continue working on your musicality and your performance without using that. And so it's important as instructors to be aware of that.
Right. Oh, yeah.
There's this wonderful marimba solo by Kevin Putz called Canyon. And the middle movement is just marimba chords. Beep, 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 beep. It's not a super long movement, but it's probably 4 or 5 minutes. And I remember working on it and just slowly, slowly getting up the stamina and the tolerance to be able to endure that. And of course, when you're practicing it, you're doing it for a lot longer than 4 minutes, but you only do it for a little bit at a time, of course, then you give yourself a break and go again and again. But I remember performing it for studio class at Boston Conservatory as a student, and I did a great job and everyone was really into it and lots of, you know, encouragement from fellow classmates. But Nancy Zeltzman she kind of like kicked back in her chair. She was disappointed. And she went, why is he playing that? He's going to ruin his hands. And she was so mad that I chose to play it. And I think more so that Kevin Putz wrote it. But I really did the right thing. I mean, I really took my time building up to it. You know, I did not do that athletic analogy that we mentioned earlier, just like try to cram that. It's like, no, you're going to need to do that for a long time, for months, and you're going to need to do a little bit every day. And now it's very comfortable to play. I can pull it back out in, you know, a couple days. And it's one of those things where the ability sticks with you, not to the full height that it started when you attained it, but you can get it back really, really quick. And it all feels, you know, healthy and okay. Elizabeth, I think you were going to give a good little plug for what y'all plan on doing in Rhythm Scene.
Yes. Starting this summer, we have begun having a series in Rhythm Scene, which is the free publication online from the Percussive Arts Society. So on the months in between Percussive Notes issues. That's pretty funny. There's a free issue called Rhythm Scene. And in each issue now, we're going to have maybe something small or slightly bigger geared towards health and wellness. And so please keep your eye out for that. It'll be written by one or more of us. And try to focus also on topics that are have to do with what's going on during that time of year. So please keep tuned.
Is that the sort of thing, it's done by members of the committee, or do you take things written by people who submit?
We've been linking to things that other people have written and try to make sure other resources are there. And we've only done a few so far, but we will take submissions, absolutely.
Oh, cool. Okay, great. Well, yeah, thanks a lot. That's perfect. Hey, everyone. I think I'm going to stop us there and call this part one. And please join us next week for part two. And thanks so much to everyone on the PAS Health and Wellness Committee. And we'll catch you next week. Okay.